Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Adam Barrett's on the line. Hey, Adam.
Hi, Fred. How's it going?
Hey, it's Friday here while we're recording this. And so there's a 50-50 chance that the recording will come out on a Friday. Well, so just in case you've just experienced the Friday before the weekend, or today is Friday when you're listening to it, happy Friday. And so, Adam, we were chatting just briefly before we get started. I forgot to ask you, so how's your week been going? Is this a good Friday, making the final sprint here?
It's the final sprint. It's been an intense week based very much around the perils of poor data collection, field data collection, and then wanting to be able to predict product behavior going forward from a data set that requires a lot of scrubbing.
And, man.
Yeah, brutal. It's been brutal. It's one of these things where they're trying to make huge financial decisions about what to do. And at the executive level, they wanted to be able to effectively figure out how much money to set aside for a warranty issue and all that today. And so we've been analyzing all week, and it really would have taken another solid week of analysis to really get the data to where we could trust it and understand all the anomalies in it and other factors, you know, such as how it was collected. But didn't have time for that. So it was the kind of thing where working till midnight, and then we started with phone calls and emails at 6 a.m. again and going all day. And yeah, even stopping to record for this, I'm just doing it to take a break for a minute. So.
All right. Well, I've certainly been there, and I think most of our listeners have faced a pile of data that's just been, okay, now what exactly does this mean? I mean, there's simple things like the data you're looking at was probably not collected for reliability analysis. Is that safe to say?
Oh, yeah. The act of collecting it was an archaeological, you know, endeavor where it was, you know, basically, you know, about as much as somebody who made that clay pot 10 million years ago set it aside carefully for you to find it. You know, in other words, they just got left and busted up and buried in dirt. That's about what this is like. Literally, this product is buried in the ground. So it actually is literally buried in dirt. Oh, it isn't archaeological.
Well, I imagine you with a pickaxe and shovel heading into the IT center, you know.
Exactly. That's exactly.
Well, what was it collected for? I mean, you have this particular case you're working about. We won't get into any specifics of who they are and stuff, but was it like the field service team or a customer support team that was, you know, tracking customer calls or customer complaints or returns?
Yeah, it was field service. It's a product that is treated pretty harshly in an outdoor environment, and they began to have these field issues occurring. And that's kind of when they started paying more attention to collecting data. The system wasn't very formal. It was kind of like the field service people telling you what's going on informally, these kind of handwritten reports. Data is like, you know, literally on paper in some sense.
So very anecdotal. If, you know, we saw 25 of these issues this last week, so we better tell somebody.
Right. And they even admit to the fact that, like, data failure, they're like, well, when customers call with one or two failures, we don't really go. We kind of wait till they call us with, you know, 25 if we're going to bother going out there. And I'm like, wait a minute. So that's why all these data points are lumped together. It's not a failure mode that has a central point. You know, like I find that out like yesterday.
Like, oh, what? Okay. So the time to failure is they're just artificially bundling these things until it percolates to the top. Wow. Yeah, I saw that with one customer where they would pull parts off and replace it with spares, and they would fill a pallet basically. And when the pallet was big enough for them to want to move it out of the way, they would call them all in. And so they'd have 10 failures all in one day.
Right.
They just wouldn't report it.
Yeah. But this isn't even consistent because some sites, the service guy is very attentive. You know, he gets a call and he runs over, you know, and, you know, so that one is more attentive, and it's not even consistent. You can't even just say, oh, okay, I'll just average it between. So it's that kind of thing. It takes a lot of scrubbing to figure out. And every time you play with the data and do a Weibull calculation, you know, you're like, the fit's pretty good. And then you decide to break the data point at a certain point. And you're like, oh, wow, that section between day 15 and day 1,000 is a really good fit. If I break it after that, there's clearly another behavior out, you know, and it just kind of, it's so much back and forth and iterative cleaning. I think that they're learning a lot about to where if I propose, hey, let's work on your data collection methods, they're going to be pretty enthusiastic to address it.
Save a week of headache. You know, I've worked with one client where they actually hired somebody just to gather and scrub the data. And it was her full-time job for months and months and months, just cleaning this stuff up. She had the advantage of over time, she got so familiar with the products and the data that we needed and the reliability side. She was very instrumental in getting a very nice system that was very flexible, yet asked the field service folks the right questions, put the right fields in front of them to get information in a consistent way. There's a, you know, I don't think I've ever, well, I take that back. I had one customer actually send me Weibull +++ files. Here's our data. What does this mean? And all I had to do was hit plot, you know, essentially, and played with it a number of ways. And it was already had little categories and with the different failure mechanisms they tracked and stuff. But even with somebody that does the scrubbing for you and cleans it up, you mentioned one thing I want to come back to is how is it collected? And you mentioned the bundling, you know, they didn't even record it unless there was enough there to record and other people are more diligent. But sometimes when everything's perfect, that initial conversations, the customer calls and says, hey, it's not working. Field service says, all right, well, what's wrong? And it just goes to, well, it doesn't work, which is not terribly insightful. Right.
Yeah.
And if that record doesn't get updated with some kind of fracas system or some kind of triage or some kind of closed loop to say, well, what was the failure mechanism? Not what was replaced. That's often worse than just what, than not just knowing that it failed in general. Mm-hmm. But getting some a diagnostic work on it to find out what's going on. But that's got to get back to that record of when it was reported.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is it can there can be so many variations of how the data gets messed up. You can have technicians who think they're doing the right thing by when they get called to come in and fix one. They're like, well, while I'm in here, I'll replace these other two. That had nothing wrong with them. They just tripled the quantity of failure on that site. You know, you have all these crazy when things aren't controlled, you have all these things that are good intentions, but create to where the data set ends up with such a tolerance around it that it becomes highly questionable. We've changed single factors in our assumptions that have, you know, effectively cut the projected failure rate in half from like 50,000 to 20,000. And you're just like, wow, what do we do with that assumption? That has a big effect.
Right. And you're right. And being able to go back and test it, you really do need a clean data set. Now, on the other hand, when you do have a good set, I worked with one company that had they only had like 5 modules within their product. And so the failures were usually pretty straightforward. If the compressor failed, they knew to replace the compressor and its control module. And so it was pretty much replaced in whole, that whole component. And so at that level, at the module level, we could get time to failure distributions for the overall system and for these 5 major subsystems of it. And when we broke it out, it told a really nice story because there was some stuff that failed early and there was some stuff that failed late. And it gave us really nice Paretos of what to focus on for different time periods of the product's use. And so they knew that they had, anecdotally, they knew that they had problems with installations. This was a home medical device and it was loaded off a truck and bounced over stairs and all kinds of issues of just the installation process. And then there were parts that wore out a little bit quicker than anybody expected. And so the two subsystems that had those dominant failure mechanisms really stood out and dominated the entire system picture. And there was like 3-4 other things where the other, like software, was rock solid. The user interface, the keyboards, and the software, that control board in that interface board was never replaced. or very, very rarely. And so, but they were the best at getting resources. You know, wow. And we're like, all right, you guys, you back off. Let's put some money that you've been doing. Now you've been doing a good job. That's all great. You're not having any problems. Don't screw it up. Let's put the money to solve some of these other problems in other areas. And then we have the data to do it. So the data can be a mess. And in that case, they had it down to that module level. Now it got really screwed up when we went, say, into the compressor and that control module to figure out what was going on there. Because in that case, it was no failure analysis, inconsistent recording of symptoms. It was free text at best. It was really, really hard to dive into it. And that simple step of taking the data we had and could do something with, like in your case, Adam, is then it prompts, oh, we need to be consistent on how we collect this data so we can use it again. But there's hope, you know, but you've run into there's just the clerical errors, right? Somebody transposes a figure, or one of the times the failures is 6 years before the product was shipped. You know,
I wish that's what we were dealing with. It'd be so straightforward.
Right. Well, there's that, right? Then there's just structural problems of like customers saying, well, I'm not going to bother calling you, or the tech's not going to bother reporting it until we have a reason to go out there, kind of thing. There's just structural things. We had one case where these guys were, they were paid per repair in this repair center. And so the emphasis was on turning repairs around quickly, get them off your bench quickly. But they didn't get paid unless they filled out the paperwork. And so the required fields to get paid were serial number and a few other pieces and, you know, time in, time out, that kind of stuff. But if they just checked any box on what they actually did, replaced compressor or replaced power supply, there was no check on that. Right? So this repair center had a huge sets of orders regularly for power supplies for this one computer. And their data was all motherboards. But the motherboard checklist, it was a checklist of things they could just pick off on this screen. But the motherboard was the closest to the last required field. The minimum that they had to fill in so they get paid for it, get credit for it.
Right.
And then the information for other people that didn't affect what they did, they would just check something. And so 9 out of 10 times it was the motherboard, because that was just the closest.
Right.
Yeah. So it was like, okay, we got to change the way this is. And that's difficult because it's got to have something useful for the guy filling out the form. Otherwise, it's going to be garbage.
Well, they have to somehow be a part of the investigation. You know, it's a detective. It's a job as a detective, and they have to be somehow aligned with the fact that you get the correct result, because you can always get a result, and that's where the iterative process is, that you're, you know, something as simple as, you know, trying to figure out the distribution curves. You can always make a curve fit. You know, it's just it's looking at it and being like, you know what, that doesn't – I don't like that fit doesn't look right to me, because I have to, you know, put my bankroll on warranty cost, and I want to keep messing with it and see if I can get it better and better and better, because the more accurate I get it, the more money I save. I mean, that's they have to have that ownership somehow too, which is very hard to transfer to other levels. But it's very easy for somebody just to do a report and say, yeah, this is the curve.
And that's if you know, if there's no thinking involved, it's easy. It's unfortunately we you know, from the technician who's doing a repair on something, they're looking at symptoms, they're looking at, you know, diagnostic data, they're looking at using their knowledge of the system to effect a repair. And in many cases, in almost every case I've ever run into, that's their primary job. The customer service folks are help the customer get back on their feet and their system running and make it right again. I actually had one VP, I'm sure I've talked about this before, of a customer service group that just ignored failure analysis and reporting to the rest of the organization. And in discussion with him, it was, well, why would I? I've got all these people working for me, and we're getting really good at returning repairs to our customers. And I said, well, you know, the customers are complaining that their products are failing. He says, well, the only thing I can do about that is repair it. And I says, well, there's a missing connection here. The data that you have the potential to collect and the information you have in your facility could improve the product. You could get that back to the design team and operations team. And he's like, why would I want to do that?
Right.
I wouldn't need as many repair people.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
people would lose their jobs.
Yeah. Actually, that's so funny you say that. It's a little bit of a tangent, but I just saw an interesting documentary just regarding analyzing health in our health system. Mm-hmm. And he highlighted the problem with that our health system is entirely geared towards, as far as profitability goes for everybody involved, hospitals, companies, towards the treatment of illnesses. That's mm-hmm. where all the money is. Mm-hmm. Prevention of illness just causes loss of sales, right? Even for a hospital. Prevention doesn't generate any revenue. And so, you know, the system, that's where obviously they're getting towards regulations to assist with that. But it goes to show, just it's kind of interesting that it's exactly what you just described with that manager. Our system is entirely incentivized for, from the corporate standpoint, for treatment of illnesses is big money. Prevention doesn't do you anything. You know,
It reduces the number of prescriptions you can write if you do prevention. Oh, yeah. Well, the same a couple of years ago, I had a class I was teaching in Stockholm, in Oslo, and you know the little kiosks at the airports that in the U.S. sell sugars and candies and sweets and pastries and stuff like that, in newspapers and whatever. The one in Oslo's airport had fresh bananas and kiwi and strawberries, and it was just a fruit stand. And it wasn't the only one. It was like they're everywhere. The hotel, instead of just a couple of apples, or in the U.S., oftentimes it's a cookie or something sweet, the hotel had a fruit basket. Yeah, take what you want. There was a fruit basket in my room. It wasn't a fancy room. I had the breaks at the training session was all fresh cut fruit. Yep. And this is January in Norway.
Right.
What's going on? And they said that the state health organization, and they're much more socialized medicine than we are by far, realized that people weren't eating enough fruits and vegetables, and so they subsidized the price of it. So it was nearly free to have fresh fruit and vegetables always available. And it had been a couple of years since they instituted that, and the amount of hospital visits and illnesses and stuff was already significantly improved. They could measure it directly. Yeah. And because it was state run, prevention was a way to avoid building another hospital.
Yeah. Oh, it would lower taxes. You literally could correlate it to people, you know, your health, it could lower taxes. I used to live in Denmark. I lived in Copenhagen for 2 years. It's the same, you know, very socialized system. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really – and right, exactly. The incentives in the other direction.
Well, bringing it back to industry, military contracts are often this way. There's little incentive to get the design right from a reliability point of view because they're on a cost-plus basis to design the product. They make money repairing it. They're the only repair center, so they can charge what they want there basically. And I've been in companies where – the CEO just didn't understand why we would want to work on design for reliability. It was counterintuitive to him.
Yeah.
And now they're out of business because the military said, well, I can get this from somebody that actually makes good products that I don't need to send off to you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, it goes back to this data collection, though. There's got to be an incentive for it. Now, what do you think?
I think they have one now. I think my customer now has an incentive to look at this because it's not until you experience the true cost, right, which is now, you know, they are actually today formulating out the checks they're going to have to write in the upcoming years because of this. And then all you need to do is propose what would it take as far as resource to develop a better data collection system. And you see that that's a tenth of the cost of what they're going to spend on just this one product issue.
Oh, then, it's probably the tenth of the cost of the risk of getting it wrong. I mean, if they put a bunch of money in warranty reserves, they can't invest it elsewhere. And if they miss, either plus or minus, getting better information would help them right. reduce that risk.
So unfortunately, it takes that kind of thing to get people to, you know, like that's where it becomes a very clean cut case to the people who are dealing with the bottom line. Well, it's kind of like the heart attack that makes you eat better, right?
For a couple of days. Right?
In a way. In a way.
Right. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about that is that, you know, if I was doing nothing but fast food and had a heart attack, I'd go find better hamburger places, you know, go to the upscale
right.
ones. You know?
Right.
They use a higher, they change the grease bin every more often or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I don't think that. So I was just thinking of another question for you, but I think it'd probably make a different episode is, will we get better data if we automate it? If we have the data collection is just like the black box type scenario on your equipment?
I don't know, because at some point, because here's the problem. It's hard to take out the intelligence for totally take the intelligence out. If you get just a black box, you press a button and it gives you data out. That means that system, which is not, in, you know, it's intelligently making decisions, has a ton of assumptions it's working on. And, you know, if those assumptions are incorrect, you're still getting an answer. It's just not going to match reality. You need, there is, we still are not at the point you can remove the human element that says, wait a minute, that doesn't look right. You know, which basically mm-hmm. is what's happening now this week with this data set. We made an initial prediction and then continued to work with it and was like, wait a minute, if I release this failure, you know, these failures after 1,000 days from constraining the Weibull curve, how much better does it fit? And it was like, holy cow, it's a dead fit, which means that there's a very specific behavior change now. Something right. else is happening there. And it's like, and then you kind of logically say, wait a minute, engineering things don't fail that suddenly. Something else, you know, maybe it's the way they're collecting it. And so if you had a black box, it would have just given you the initial projection based on the full data set. So that's kind of the, you know, that's why we're still valuable. Once software can do that, then they don't need us at all anymore. it'll be the Matrix. We're just batteries to power the computers because they know how to do it. So.
Yeah. I'm gonna say let's come back to this topic because I think there's some benefits for some areas of this, and there's some already in use in a number of ways. Yet I tend to agree with you on the analysis part, which when you automate the data collection system, you need to think through it with the end in mind. And so I want to unpack that a little bit more.
Sounds good.
All right. So let's ask our listeners, you know, do you collect data? And more importantly, do you use it? And what kind of hurdles or battles or troubles do you have getting good data, say, from your field service teams and or your IT department? Hopefully you're not using a pick and shovel down in the computer center to find your data. What I'm really interested in from the listeners, Adam, is how did you make the transition? How did you go from, oh, we need to look at this information and it's an absolute mess and it's hard to make heads or tails to it, to what was the breakthrough, like in your case, Adam, of, you know, oh man, we need to make a major decision and this data is a mess. We need to fix the data collection so we don't do this in the future. I wonder if that story replicates, if other people have had similar stories like that. So head over to reliability.fm. You'll find the Speaking of Reliability show and the various episodes, and you can leave us a comment or find us on LinkedIn or other places and let us know. We'd love to hear from you and add some notes to the show and or come back. And if you've got a unique issue or problem or similar problem to a large degree, let us know what some of the details are so we can talk about it on the show. We'd love to be able to do that, tailor the show to you, to what you would be most useful to you. So with that, Adam, let's wrap this one up.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.